say that all our meetings are important, especially those meetings that have entities, because we believe that entities are closer to the people. And this is why, as public representatives, we believe that entities are important. During this five-year term, as the portfolio committee, we've taken a conscious decision that we're going to focus on entities, because 80% of the budget of the department is transferred to entities. So this is where we are focusing during the five-year term until 2019, from 2014 to 2019. And we always say, as the portfolio committee, that we commend people who work in entities, especially the councils, because in most cases, people who are in the councils of these entities are people who have a job somewhere else, people who are giving of themselves for the entities to deliver on their mandate. And they do this without getting anything. But they give their time, their intellect, they give everything to ensure that the entity is functional. We commend the people who are in the councils or boards of entities. Last week we had a meeting with a number of the KZN, in the board or council of the KZN Museum, there was a gentleman, honorable members, if you remember, who came to me after the meeting and presented this to the portfolio committee. This is written, is given to the portfolio committee. It's one copy, and there are how many of us? And when I looked at the book, and when I was, and this gentleman gave this book to me, he was saying that he has written the book because we tend to appreciate people only when they are dead, only when they can't hear what we're saying about them. So he decided to write this book that has reflections on relationships that he has had with people from different sectors of life. And I want, this morning I took a decision that I want to appreciate this committee members today, because of the work that they do and the manner in which they do their work. They take an extra mile. I've never seen people who are committed like the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. And what I really appreciate, that things are never about them, but they about, it's about issues, and it's about the people that we are serving. Honorable members, I take this opportunity to appreciate you and to say that you inspire me in so many ways. I don't think I would do the job that I'm doing if it weren't for you. So I want to thank you and appreciate you. Anyone who wants to have a look at the book will get it from Jabu. So Jabu, you are our library. This is where we're going to store the book. And I will communicate to the gentleman that the portfolio committee has received the book, and we will take turns to read it. It's really good to appreciate little things, not big things, little things of people just being friendly, of Ubuntu, those things, they are in that book. The gentleman is Fezile Dantile. Yeah, he's from the Eastern Cape. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, I would like us to introduce ourselves before we start our meeting, and maybe just to ask Jabu if there are any apologies.
Good morning, members. Good morning, everyone. We do have a standing apology from Dr. Esther Hazen, and we have three apologies from members that will be joining us a bit late. They had to attend to a quick committee meeting at Water and Sanitation. Mr. Makondo, Mam Pilankulu, and Mamutole is running a bit late, but she's on the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, those are the apologies. Are they accepted? Honorable Mokhotsi proposes, and Honorable Mahlangu, okay, accepts. We accept the apologies. And in introducing ourselves, I am Koli Swatom, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, of this portfolio committee.
My name is Jabu Mahlangu.
Mokhotsi Pulan.
Winston Rabutapi.
Alan Grootboom.
Peter Mulder.
Thank you very much, honorable members. There's an honorable member that is coming in, and as soon as she sits, she's going to introduce herself. She's entering in style.
Morning, Chair, Ms. Chavatsoledi, member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable members. The DG, we're going to allow you and the entity to introduce yourselves.
Makoto Matlala, CFO of the department.
Vusithemba Ndima, acting director general of the department.
And Pretorius, William Humphreys, art gallery director.
David Robbins, the chair of council at WAG.
Thoko Mngomezulu, Deputy Chairperson, William Humphrey at Gallery.
Lukas Stokenstrom, CFO, William Humphrey's Art Gallery.
Good morning, Monica Newton, DDG Arts, Cultural Promotion and Development at the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, my name is Lula Manda Bangulu from the Office of the DG at Arts and Culture.
Good morning, my name is Fiona Clayton. I'm the researcher for the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Linum Zekomle, Coordinator for the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Matilda Mukosi, Good
morning, Sakio Yusuf from the Department of Arts and Culture.
And she did the last one.
Good morning,
Good morning, everyone. I'm Achabulile to Miss Amtia, Committee Secretary.
Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Moses Matheny from PMG.
What's PMG?
Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, now that we know each other, it's going to be easier for us to converse, because this is what this is about, for us to exchange information, for us to ask questions. And we always say as the portfolio committee that we really encourage people to be free, don't be afraid. Be free, be open, be honest, and when we ask questions, in this forum, we don't take anything personally. You don't personalize anything, because we ask questions. This is what we do. This is what we are paid to do, to ask you questions. Sometimes we ask difficult questions. Yes, and it's a reminder to all of us that let's switch off our cell phones or put them on silent. If you're waiting for a president's call, you can put it on silent. Because I know there are people who can't switch them off totally. If you are waiting for the president to call you, put it on silent. It's fine. As I was saying, that in the committee we sometimes ask difficult questions. And don't take it personally. In this committee, nothing is about an individual. Everything is about the people that we are serving. It's about the people out there. So we are going to give an opportunity to the department to give us an overview, and then we will give the entity an opportunity to do the presentation. And thereafter, we are going to ask questions. Department, there are issues that are matters arising. And we have received documents from the department to that effect. Ujabu is just going to tell us what we were supposed to get and what we have received from the department. Over to you, Ujabu.
Chair, we've received the NFVF information on the the forensic report on the NFVF. We just need the two outstanding matters arising on the agenda, the report on the funding to the NPOs, and also the detailed list of the funding panels in the department. I haven't received confirmation of when these will be circulated to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
It's really, when we as the portfolio committee ask for information from the department, we believe that we are asking for something that is there. We're not asking for something that's going to be generated. And we expect within 7 days to get the information. And when we don't get the information, we start asking ourselves questions. And when we start asking ourselves questions as the portfolio committee, it's not good at all. So the department should really ensure that we get the information, because it's about oversight, which is our constitutional mandate. We don't ask for information just because we are being nasty or because we are witch hunting. We want information because we want to deliver on our mandate, which is constitutional. I'm now going to give over to the department to present, and then we will give the entity an opportunity to present on the William Humphrey Art Gallery, the annual performance and strategic plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the honorable members of the committee, to the Chairperson of the William Humphrey Art Gallery, the CEO, as well as the other members of the Council, as well as the colleagues. Chairperson, I know that I still have got my sins that I need to, but maybe we will talk about them later, but just my apologies, sincerest apologies beforehand. I will just quickly go through the overview, and then the CEO will then just get to the details of the presentation. The main purpose of this particular presentation is just to see whether the institution at hand is actually aligning its strategic objectives to the departmental goals and, of course, the bigger goals of government. I wouldn't go to the details of this, but I will go to the slide that then talks about what is the DAC outcome-oriented goal in this case, the transformed and productive arts culture heritage sector, And if we look at the entity strategic objectives and how it links to DAC objectives, it is to improve quality of collections, maintain an optimum environment for preservation of collections, but also it's about regular inspection by restorers, because the idea behind this is to ensure that the national treasures of this country are protected and preserved, but also it's about the identification of new treasures. Now, you look at the key outputs, deliverables, the institution purchase artworks for William Humphrey's art galleries, permanent collections in order to redress imbalances and representativity. As we know that most of the institutions, some of the institutions use not to collect, identify new collections among communities. But this institution has started doing that in order to redress past imbalances, but also to ensure that there are no losses that are incurred on collections, also visit by restorers to ensure that the heritage assets still keep their integrity and authenticity. In terms of an efficient and effective and efficient arts, culture and heritage sector, to improve compliance with government prescripts, coordinate and align entity with executive authority. Here the outputs are development and submission of plans, reports, an MTEF database in compliance with Public Finance Management Act. In terms of an integrated and inclusive society, the institution is involved in showcasing the heritage assets for enrichment and edification of domestic and international audience, showcasing historic background of development of contemporary art, film as a powerful tool contributing to enhancing national identity and social cohesion. Now, the key outputs here is presentation of temporary loan exhibitions, rotating exhibitions from William Humphrey's Art Gallery Permanent Collection, outreach programs presented to school learners in the Northern Cape, film, music, and literature set work screening to add value to visitor experience, access, and audience development. Looking at the goal that talks about a professional and capacitated arts, culture, and heritage sector. Here the idea is to enhance capacity and deliver on mandate towards realization of William Humphrey's art gallery vision, contribute to skills development, job creation, poverty alleviation, moral regeneration, and social cohesion. What are the key outputs? It's the institution implement programs geared towards increasing capacity within the gallery. 6, training interventions, implementation of special community projects. Now, this is a performance overview, which is a reflection of how the institution has performed as at the third quarter. We see there that it has been able to achieve 89% of its targets, with only 11 that were not achieved. That is the third quarter. Now, if you look at the three-year performance overview, just to get a sense of how the institution has been performing over years, in 2013, they was able to get to 85%, 14, 15, 69%, and we see improvement once again in 2015, 2016, where they were able to get to 86%, achieve 86% of their targets. And then, of course, this year, which is the third quarter, that is 2016-2017, they were able to achieve 89%. And of course, we still have to await the fourth quarter to see how they've performed. But as things stand, there's a lot of promise that the institution is doing well in terms of achieving its targets. Now, income and expenditure trends. These are this is the slide talks about the income, which is the income that is constituted by government grants as well as own income, and it also takes us through various years from 13, 14, 14, 15, 15, 16, and then audit outcome. I must say that this is one institution that falls within those who have been doing very well, but until such time that there was GRAP 103, it's been it has suffered the consequences of that. Governance, we can see that there hasn't been any upheavals in this institution. If you look at the number of council members over years, there has been kind of stability. The number of council meetings, of course, there have been at least 4 meetings per year. A number of council committee meetings, also there's been work happening in that. Attendance rate of councils, number of audit committee meetings, number of management meetings, and number of staff meetings. The issues for noting that the institution would like us to look at, the state of collections, which is very important because this institution exists in order to ensure that those collections are well taken care of. There's non-functional air conditioning system, which affects the gallery's collection. This also affects the visitor numbers. It becomes too hot inside the gallery. There has already been engagements with the Department of Public Works, which is responsible for maintenance. The issue of audit fees, this poses a challenge to the institute to shortage of funds. DAC, through the CFO's forum, is in continuous engagement with the National Treasury concerning this matter. And I think that it must be stated that that's not the only institution that has raised this matter, that the amount of the cost for compliance is more than what they can afford. Council, the term of the council will expire on 13 November 2017. The department has commenced with the process to reconstitute the new council. I would like to stop there, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, PG. I'm now going to give over to the council chairperson to do the presentation or delegate, because as a chairperson, you can delegate to an official.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's very interesting for me to be here. I have written extensively about our democracy and how it works, and it's really nice to be back here and to have a look at how it is working. I'm impressed, Madam Chair. With regard to WAG, I find it very interesting that the department has looked at various things. They have looked at the failure to achieve in certain respects. We're not told which respects those are. And we are told as well that GRAP 103 is causing huge, huge administrative problems. And I come to you as the chairman of this council and saying to you that essentially there are two streams, the two responsibilities that the council and the gallery have in front of this committee, which is an elected democratic institution. And the two streams are the administration of money, the abiding within the law, and so on. And one accepts that that is a very important responsibility. But the second responsibility is that we have to make use of what we've got to deal with, certainly in the case of the Northern Cape, to deal with the marginalized and impoverished community, not necessarily financially impoverished, but culturally impoverished. I grew up in Kimberley. And I was actually around when WAG started. So just with those very brief remarks, I would like to do as you suggest and delegate. And I'm going to ask Anne Pretorius, the director, to take over from me.
Madam Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for the opportunity. And first of all, a word of appreciation for moving my date to something that would fall within my commitments. I do appreciate it. I'd like to start with the strategic plan, which everybody knows is a 5-year plan. In this plan, we have our sights set on full achievement of our mandate, our vision, and our mission. We also contributed to committing to the national imperatives of the day during this era of rebuilding our nation. The mandate, the vision, and the mission, the definitions are quite explicit and set the tone for the entity. All the outcomes are aimed at achieving these principles set in these three definitions. All operational activities are multidisciplinary and are also aimed to produce results that give weight and credibility to these principles. These principles were set reasonably early on in the William Humphreys Art Gallery's operations, and I believe they're actually still quite relevant. The strategic objectives are also quite unambiguous. The most important strategic objective is to fill the institution's mandate, which is to collect and conserve South African works of art of excellence and hold these in trust for the nation. All objectives contribute to the national all other objectives, could I add, contribute to the national imperatives of skills transfer and development, job creation, poverty alleviation, moral regeneration and social cohesion and nation building. WAG expertise and resources are aimed at a specific target group of marginalized citizens. We're not dealing here with people from the affluent sector, but concentrate on these groups who have little or no opportunity. In terms of transformation, we believe it's not a quick, haphazard sequence of easy victories, but an ongoing ethic informing all activities at the institution. This ethic will contribute towards the success of the institution's objective of maintaining itself as a relative and meaningful institution in a changed society and in the community it serves, as well as on a national level. You don't ever get to a stage we believe that you can say we've done transformation. It continues and it happens every day. Access is one of the key issues, and it doesn't refer to being wheelchair friendly only. It's a broad concept of accessibility. It's an open-minded and tolerant attitude that makes provision for all people of different walks of life, and our activities and our exhibitions would be mediated by labels and explanations, and publications also conceptualized around the institution's core function. There should also be access in terms of different generations, different ages, classes, mental and physical capacity or disabilities, so that the broad public has access in the widest possible sense. The notion that art museums are intimidating and elitist is gradually changing, and as the visitor experience becomes enjoyable and enlightening, a wider audience is developing. Gone are the days that we have this ivory tower where people in the know go to puff up their egos. It has to become and will continue to become an entity that serves the ordinary working class people of the country. Our goal in terms of administrative and financial accountability is to achieve the highest standards, evidence of which would be an unqualified opinion from the Auditor General. And so far we've had a very good record in this respect, but GRAP 103 has put us in a black hole. Clearly, we have a very strong desire to get out of that position, but it is clear that certain parts of the standard are not within our scope of control. We will, however, keep on working at that issue. The institution has earned its reputation for excellent standards in conservation and collection management, and we endeavour to uphold these standards to ensure the well-being of the collections, which are an important part of the national estate which the institution holds in trust. In order to uphold these standards, ongoing specialised in-service staff training is always made available to staff to empower them to fulfil this objective. I'd like to say that in terms of human resource development, We've constantly reported that there are too few members of staff to comply with all the prescriptions of the PFMA. The workload we face is the same in terms of the Act as the bigger institutions, but we don't have the human and financial resources of the bigger entities. However, we still endeavour to meet all the requirements of that Act. In terms of collections and exhibitions, which are the lifeblood of an art museum, I would like to report that we haven't not collected work by black artists. We didn't collect enough. So if the previous councils in the days of apartheid collected 10 Pinyas, there weren't 10 Sokotos, Ernst Macaubers, Peter Clarks, etc. So the balance was skewed. And the last years of purchasing policy, we have actually aimed very specifically at trying to balance the representativity in the collections. And we've made good headway. Again, I say transformation is never complete. We continue to work at that. And obviously, in hindsight, it's difficult because everything is that much more expensive and it costs very dear now to buy, for instance, a Sokoto. You might have paid 100 rand in the old days. Now it's actually out of our reach. So in certain instances, we were able to close the gaps. But at the same time, we have to buy the new artists as well. Otherwise, we're just creating a new imbalance for the following staff members and councils to deal with. In terms of education, we continue to offer support to teachers and learners with the arts and culture curriculum. To this end, school principals are constantly invited to make use of the institution's facilities for site visits, activities that include worksheets and projects. We have a fantastic reference library as well as a film library. We do film screenings and lectures. And of course, the huge excitement at the moment is about the Salt Lake University, which is new on our horizon. But in fact, that new institution is changing the horizon of Kimberley. The skyline is already changing with the buildings that are springing up. And we are very excited to be involved with them. Later, if Madam Chair and Honourable Members wish more detail on this, I have got detail available with the Salt Lake University as a partner. Other parts of the strategic plan deal with early childhood development, youth development and other development. And these programs obviously are all connected to our field of expertise, which is arts and culture. There is no better way to learn than through the senses. In fact, it's well understood that all learning takes place through the senses. So we are very well placed to make a contribution to the development of our children, as well as youth and women particularly. Training the trainers, our involvement with Sol Plaiki, if I get to give you some of the detail, will show you how we are training the trainers. But every time we engage with schools and teachers, we are actually equipping them to deal with arts and culture. They are not always well equipped to deal with arts and culture. It is sometimes foisted upon them. And we help to empower those teachers for the benefit of the learners. Outreach is seriously important to us. We sit in Kimberley in a huge province, and so very few people can actually come to the museum, so we have to take the museum to the people. We take an exhibition of original art into the Northern Cape, we visit schools, and we have a program that runs alongside of this exhibition. It includes practical art and craft sessions, film screenings, and a new initiative is the establishment of a children's library, which I would like our chairperson to tell you about at a later stage during this presentation. This is all geared at making a quality intervention into marginalized schools with a big impact. Partnerships and linkages. Obviously, we're always looking for partnerships because we cannot afford always to do everything that we have to do. So we go and look for donors and sponsors. It's very difficult nowadays in Kimberley. All head offices have moved to Johannesburg or Cape Town. The people who are left manning offices in Kimberley are not empowered to make decisions about sponsorships and donations. So when we go into Johannesburg and Cape Town, we're an unknown entity. So we can't always rely on the Cinderella's, the fairy godmothers like De Beers used to be. De Beers is no longer, everybody says, go and ask De Beers, it no longer exists. We are still constantly looking for partnerships. We have a very fine partnership at the moment with MTN. But in terms of partnerships, it's very important for the museum to be a partner. And we are seriously involved in being a partner in the Northern Cape, and we have relationships with other organizations that emphasize this notion of serving the community by being an accessible center of excellence. Generation of funding, I've touched on briefly, is very difficult, but we have styled ourselves as a good conference venue, a good training venue, and it does bring in a little bit of money, but more importantly almost, it brings new people to the gallery, it brings working class people to the gallery. So we gradually break down the notion of an elitist entity. That's the 5-year plan. Clearly everything in the annual performance plan speaks to those objectives. Mr. Ndima has touched on our problems with audit outcomes. I'm not going to carry on and on and on telling you about GRAP 103, but it has been a long engagement with the Accounting Standards Board since 2008. We've been telling them that this was an undesirable standard, and we've put many issues on the table that actually proved that it was an undesirable standard. However, it was adopted, and now we face the consequences of it. And I believe we haven't even scratched the surface of the implications of this accounting standard. We think that the standard was written for heritage institutions, and we're taking a hammering. I think DAC is taking a hammering. Unfairly so, because there are many other ministries that should also be being audited about GRAP 103. They haven't even begun to look at the police, the military, public works department. When you start to scratch into the implications of this act, you're going to figure out that we cannot afford this accounting standard. In a country where half of our people are starving, I cannot imagine that the people in authority could have believed that GRAP 103 was sensible or rational. I could go on and on and on about GRAP 103, but let me move on. Other audit outcome from the prior year was an emphasis of matter, which we were very angry about, which in fact was not an emphasis of matter. It was also not unauthorized, Madam Chair. I am tired of being threatened by the Auditor General. We were literally told that if we did not accept this as an emphasis of matter, we would have a second qualification. So we took the lesser of the two evils, but that is not how audit is supposed to happen. I have with me some details on that matter, should Madam Chair and the Honourable Members wish to have more detail on it.
Can you just
tell us what yes.
is about?
In terms of the matter, the emphasis of matter, which they put into the report as irregular expenditure, we have on our premises an outsourced catering facility, and we have an agreement with that catering facility. Museums and food don't actually marry well, but in order to improve and enhance visitor enjoyment to the entity, we run a food supply. There is no point in getting three quotes to give our council members a meal at council meeting when we have an on-site supplier, a service provider. It makes no sense. And the practicalities of bringing food off the payment into the gallery and find some other venue that is not outsourced with the agreement is impossible, and you cannot spread food through the museum. So this is explained ad nauseum to AG officials, and yet any amount that they found which was paid to the Palace Tea Room above 2,000 Rand was brought in as irregular expenditure, in spite of the fact that we'd already followed all the prescripts that the supply chain management and treasury notes give us. It's been double disclosed at council, and it's been delegated and condoned at how many levels, and yet they insist on putting it in. It is not irregular or unauthorized. The same applies to a consultant we use, which has gone through all the SCM procedures. It has been disclosed at council, it's been approved at council, it's been condoned at council. What is irregular about this? What they found was that in the file of documentation, the consultant's tax clearance certificate wasn't available at that time. We gave them the tax certificate during the audit, and they said, no, we don't accept this, and they hit us with an emphasis of matter for irregular expenditure. That's just unreasonable. So those are the two items that caused the emphasis of matter in the previous report. I'd be prepared to answer further questions on that matter later, should the honourable members
continue.
Thank you. In terms of all the other audit outcomes, strategic objectives, we have achieved it all. It's in the report, it's in the performance information. Our public engagement programs and our collection management and our outreach programs are particularly successful, and we'd really like to tell you more about that, if time will allow. For the year ahead, we can take a look at the expenditure estimates. I'd like to tell you that since the tabling of this annual performance plan, DAC has adjusted the allocation with some funds ring-marked for compliance with GRAP 103. However, that funding is going to come in small tranches, so we're going to have to allow it to build up in our reserves so that we eventually have a sensible amount of money with which we can achieve some of the objectives of GRAP 103. There is also additional money allocated for us now to pay directly the municipal services. Originally that was the delegation that Public Works Department had. We now have to pay it directly. So we have additional money, but the baseline allocation has not changed. We're looking at an amount of 7.82 million, and we have three major programs. You will see we have administration, business development, and public engagement, and you will see the budget figures for the year ahead. I have got a typo here, I'm sorry to say. If we could reverse, the baseline is 782. Oh, Lucas, could I have your attention to this slide, please? I have put a wrong figure in the baseline grant. Could you please ignore that? That 6892 is not correct. It is as per the previous slide, which is 7820. Am I correct, Lucas? Okay. That's correct. If I could move on. I'd like to tell you that at the moment the compensation of employees is 53%, 54% close enough. Art purchases, 15.5% close enough. Insurance, 3.16%. The balance of the expenditure relates to procurement of goods and services, and it's spread through administration, business development, and public engagement. We cannot afford to upset this balance of compensation of employees by shooting that up. Then we will have no money for operational budget, and we will obviously be very close to closing the doors. In spite of the fact that there are serious constraints with regard to the size of the establishment at the institution, compliance with legislative prescripts in terms of the PFMA and the National Treasury regulations is under control. However, the accounting standards and audit requirements have become so technical that a specialist consultant services have to be obtained to assist. It is obvious that the Auditor General's audit plan does not fit small entities, and the cost of this audit in relation to the allocation is unreasonable. For your information, the 2015-16 financial year's audit fee was $451,940, and our total expenditure was obviously our allocation, which was $6,643,788. We insist that we're entitled to pay the 1% of total expenditure as per the public audit act. Sorry, my tongue is slipping. But the balance remains, and the balance is getting bigger, and the interest is getting bigger. And in spite of constant communication to all stakeholders, it is not resolved. In the prior year, we received a letter from the Auditor General and Treasury stating that the AG should perform the balance of the audit on a pro bono basis, which is very difficult for them if they've outsourced the audit. They still have to pay the firm they've outsourced it to. This year they've taken our audit back and they have given us some assurances that they're going to do something about this matter, but I'm not entirely certain what they're going to do about the 800,000 odd outstanding on our account. We don't have the money to pay it. In terms of business development, the core function is to collect, conserve and celebrate the country's artistic heritage. And to this end, significant and rare works by black artists that were not previously represented in the collection, or those poorly represented, will be sought. If you have 5 paintings by Venning, you need to have 5 paintings by Peter Clark. In fact, we've done very well here. I can say almost without fear of contradiction that we've probably got the most Durand Sechelalis, Cyprian Chalakwe, Dan Rakhwati. We've done very well, but we need to continue. And we need to continue to collect contemporary works so that we don't make another hole for our followers to fall into. We need to collect from all race and gender groups and not to create those new imbalances. The budget for this following year is 1.260 million. This is 15.45% of the baseline grant, which I've already spoken about. The objective in terms of exhibitions is 24 exhibitions will be presented during the course of the year. And these include historic exhibitions, temporary loan exhibitions, rotating exhibitions from the permanent collection, and the outreach exhibitions. Historically, we've always overachieved on this. We get closer to 28 or 30 exhibitions. Sometimes it sounds to me like overachievement is poor planning. I fail to understand that. There are times where we're offered something which you simply cannot say no to because it would be meaningful for our community to show such a thing. So we're not getting carried away on an objective. We're sometimes being organic enough to accept the fact that there is space for more. In terms of those special community projects which actually attend to the national imperatives, we have for a long time now run Kia de Mela. It's an early childhood development program where we have Monday to Friday preschool kids from desperately poor settlements in and around Kimberley who are at a huge disadvantage when they begin their formal school careers because the formative years, as we all know, are between birth and 5 years old, stretching it, getting to 6. So by the time you get to preschool, you're actually at a huge disadvantage if you have not developed those skills you need for the formal school career. This is a very successful program, and we're going to continue with it. We do a lot of arts and crafts workshop, a youth and women development, and the most important part of that project is something we present in the Kimberley Correctional Services for female offenders, also children from places of safety who are held in terms of the Criminal Procedures Act. We are not looking at doing holiday workshops for affluent kids because they're bored. We're doing these things for a very specific target group. It's the children who have little or no opportunity. The prison project has been very interesting in that not only are we teaching them skills that they might be able to use when they have served their sentences and try and reintegrate into society, it has been obvious that the rebuilding of self-esteem and human dignity has been one of the most important spin-offs, and it actually reinforces the fact that these workshops can contribute to moral regeneration and successful rehabilitation into society. Education, I've spoken of in the Strat Plan. This is very important. We have a fantastic reference library. We have Sol Plaatje University students coming in and out to use it. We have a fantastic heritage conservation part in that library, which the heritage students at Sol Plaatje will find necessary to use. And we've just, as I told you, started a children's library. The statistics are terrifying. Our chairperson will tell you more about that. Much of this project is connected to what he is doing in his personal capacity. But if you look at the fact that young children are growing up without books, it's no wonder that when they leave grade 12, they are actually not employable. Mm. They are not empowered through all the interventions that should be happening at home. WAG Film is an important visual arts medium, and we have a monthly program of screenings. Literature set works to help school kids and to help teachers are screened on request and taken into the Northern Cape. And now again, storytelling and children's leisure reading. Here is a beautiful picture of our MEC in the Northern Cape reading to our Kia de Mela toddlers who are... This was the National Book Week intervention. It was amazing to see the interest and the excitement. So don't let anybody who's convinced about the internet and digital tell you that books aren't important. They're more important than ever before. WAG is serious about making a difference to marginalized children in the Northern Cape. This picture is showing an outreach into one of the schools in the Northern Cape where each child who took part was given a storybook to take home. Madam Chair, Honourable Members, may I give our chairperson an opportunity to talk? And it's about structure.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. thank you. I think that I would like to try and reiterate what the director has been saying by returning to what I said earlier, and that is that there are two basic responsibilities for an for the entity and for the council that in some respects oversees it, and that is that there are administrative responsibilities that need to be complied with. We believe that many of these responsibilities have been ill-chosen and are impractical. And that is creating a major imbalance between the bureaucratic side of running an institution and the purpose for the institution. And the purpose for the institution is being swamped by bureaucratic demand, and to me that becomes, especially in the developing world, and we're a developing world country, that becomes a serious problem and deprivation of people who are in desperate need of development. And development begins inside the personal imagination. It doesn't begin in the boardroom. It doesn't begin with funding channeled into chicken projects and all the rest of it. It begins in the imagination. That is why arts and culture are pivotal to successful development. And the bottom line is that WAG is an astonishingly versatile and active gallery institution. It is seriously understaffed and it is seriously underfunded. We did it was originated in the council, and the council asked the gallery administrators to tell us what it would look like if we had the staff that a larger institution had to fulfill all the requirements of the administration. And they did that. They took sort of average salaries from the other institutions, and I can't remember the actual percentage, but it nearly doubled our allocation to actually do that. There's 130%. That is what we are short of fulfilling, just the bureaucratic side. And the bureaucratic side is not really the side that the money should be spent on. The money should be spent on the incredible value and importance of arts and culture. In other words, the human imagination. Without the human imagination, there's no development anywhere. And we are being starved of precisely the function of the arts and culture department and ministry. With regard to the outreach, I just very briefly personally am involved in alternative methods of distribution of books into communities that have been ignored by the book trade, and in particular my interest is in making sure that the 4.5 billion rand that is spent on books in this country every year, some of that comes into the areas and the communities that have been deprived of books and of the economic development that goes with it. So that is what we are doing. When I mentioned our projects to the gallery, Mrs. Pretorius jumped at the opportunity to add books to the outreach program. And I mean, the statistics are terrifying. After 23 years of democracy, of our 25,500 schools, 11%, and we can guess which side of the racial divide that comes from, 11% have functional libraries. That means that there are over 20,000 schools without functional libraries in this country. The other statistic comes from SA Statistics, 15 million households in South Africa, and of that, 50% have not a single book in them. And essentially, when you sort of couple that to our ratings on the sort of international educational qualifications scales, it makes absolute sense. And the idea of books, and especially the relationship between literature or literacy and the visual arts, especially in children's books, I mean, it's inevitable. The willingness of WAG, which is an art institution, to work with people who are working with books makes a huge amount of sense. But essentially, my message is simply one of reiteration to what has been said by Anne, and that is, we are underfunded, we know where we should be going, and we are doing as much as we can with a hopeless budget. And I know that it's probably a bit harsh to say, but bureaucracy is currently winning the war. And the real purpose of arts and culture is losing out. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the William Humphreys Art Gallery and Director for the presentation. The issues that you are raising are not new to this portfolio committee. Every institution that comes in wants more money. And as the portfolio committee, we usually say, it's a pity that we don't have a brass penny as the portfolio committee. Otherwise, we would give you here and now bags full of money to go out there and do your work. But unfortunately, we don't have a brass penny. But in relation to GRAP 103, this is a very thorny matter. And as the portfolio committee, we identified it even last year that this GRAP 103 really is a problem to a lot of entities. And the problem is that there are entities who have been getting an unqualified audit from AG, and all of a sudden, because of GRAP 103, they went back to qualified. And there's one who went to disclaimer. So we thought that it would be good for us to initiate a meeting between the department, treasury, and AG under one roof to say this is a problem. And if an entity gets a qualified audit, that entity cannot go out and ask for funding because people are going to look at the results of the AG and say, no. You have a qualified audit, we can't trust you. So the department, we are waiting for the department to give us a report on what transpired after the initial meeting that we had with all these stakeholders under one roof to say this thing is not working, how are you really, how can we make this work together? Look at it, because it's affecting our entities negatively. And the other issues that were raised here, like your issue of the AG and not being satisfied with the manner in which they do things, I think it's you are not the only entity to feel that you are being shortchanged. But with AG, you have, and when we ask them, and they are saying that we don't audit people on things that are in our mind as AG. We use prescripts. That's all. We don't just come in and say this is not, you are not supposed to do this. We look at the law, we look at prescripts that are there. And if you transgress, we qualify you. So I think what you need to do is to go back and look at what prescripts did they use to qualify you? And then you, because we ask them, but how can you, we do have a meeting with Auditor General before we start this, the presentations that we are having. We have a meeting with them and ask them questions. And what they are saying is that we don't dream up these things that we qualify people for. We use the law. Because if the law says, for anything that is beyond 2,000 rand, go out and tender. That's it for us. This is what we will look at. If you don't do it, we qualify you. Whatever your reasons are, you need to do what the law says, full stop. So I think you need to re-look at how you deal with these issues with AG, because if you don't do what the law says, they will qualify you. There's no other way. You need to follow the prescripts of the law. And one other thing that I think is important is that the work that you are doing, really, you know, the work that you are doing, for you being an art gallery, and you do all what you are saying you're doing, because you are this institution in this area where there is nothing else. I think you are doing a good job. And I'm hoping that the department is listening, and you will find a way. Because if you are saying that you're also acting like giving out books, there is a library unit within the department that has money to do that. This is what we've been saying from day one during this period to the department, that you don't have to have your mind streamlined to say it's an art gallery. Because this is what we like doing, Tina. We box ourselves. We put ourselves in a box to say it's a library. It's a museum. It's an art gallery. So we put ourselves in that box and we don't want to move. But if there are other things that we are doing, for instance, if you are having library services, you are having all these other things, there's money for that in the department. There are other sections where they have to look. If you are trained, for instance, there was an entity that was training people in entrepreneurial skills. We're saying there is Mzansi Golden Economy within the department where they can look and say, okay, the kind of work that you are doing is catered for in that unit within the department without even going outside. So I think there's a lot that can be done. There's a lot that you can improve on, but you need this dialogue because the department is the mother, the entities are the kids. So you have to go to the mother and convince the mother that look at what we are doing. And we've been asking the department on their funding model. How do they fund? How do they take a decision to say we are giving you 8 million, we are giving you 12 million, we are giving you 100 million? How do they decide on that? And they had a problem with that, but with the reviewal of the white paper, the funding model, that's what the department has said, to say by September this year, the white paper will be in place. So we will know exactly if they give you this amount, what are they basing the amount on. So I think this is what, as the portfolio committee, we were saying from day one. And I think the department should also look at the fact that institutions that the platform is this the only big institution in that area? There are the other institutions. In art gallery, for the arts, it's the only one. We don't have a theater there. We don't have some other things that are there in other provinces. So I think this is what the department also need to look into, to say if this is the art institution that is here, how can we tap on it to be able to do other things that speak to the mandate of the department? Because that's very important. Whatever you do should speak to the mandate of the Department of Arts and Art. Honorable members, I'm giving you an opportunity to ask questions and make comments. Honorable Khotbom.
Thank you, Chair, and I also thanks for the presentation. The first question, I think this is the age-old question that we as a committee is stuck with, and that is when the presentation and what is given to us, there's a difference. I was referring specifically to the presentation of arts and culture with respect to governance. There's a difference between what was presented and what we have. I believe that should be corrected because we've got other data and statistics. I did not understand when the department mentioned in terms of the very first goal, transformed arts and culture productive heritage sector. When they said the key output purchased arts works for WAF's permanent collection or to redress imbalances and representativity. It was explained in the when WAF presented. The only question that I have for WAG is concerning concerning GRAP itself. But now I see that, which I don't see in other entities, maybe they can assist me, is the question around insurance. Now I know when you have implement or start implementing GRAP, you also have to look at insurance or at security. Now we see that you have insurance here, and I am not sure if it should be here, because I maybe the department can assist me in this one, because I'm a little bit ignorant when it comes to insurance of government property. The other question is, I've heard your plea for books, but to what extent, what is the relationship with of WAG with the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture within the province, and because books is not your core mandate. Hence, I had a question concerning you plea for more books or for money for books, whereas you have the library within the province, and the relationship or the working relationship with sports, arts and culture in the province is not clear in this document or is absent. And maybe you could just, when you respond to questions, maybe talk about that relationship, if any, that exists with the sports, arts and culture.
Thank you, Honorable Goldwyn, Honorable Mahlangu. You are noting the questions because you're going to answer at the end of question session. Honorable Mahlangu.
Chair, thank you. I think we should welcome the presentation. The chair had already expressed our appreciation for the work done by the boards, and in particular this one. I just wanted to add one aspect to the advice that she gave to the leadership of WAG here. Whilst I wish that the department should actually be helping us on this aspect, but I just want to share my experience in working with the Auditor General. Just want to pull the example of the cafeteria that you referred to. What I have found to be helpful, and we've been advising the department, that when you have a situation where you have a certain set arrangement, for you to do this, you need to adhere to this, and you have a situation like the one that you are presenting here, that we've got a cafeteria here, and I mean, it doesn't make sense. Indeed, it doesn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense even for the AG's office to do what they qualify you for, if you have the same situation. What helps is that you approach them in advance, not during audit, and say, listen, we have a situation, advise us as to how to overcome it. We have a cafeteria in-house, you have this arrangement in law, how should we deal with that matter? So you work the plan together, because the attitude of the AG is that we don't want to find you guilty, but we want you to adhere to the... So once you ask them how to overcome a particular problem, they actually help you, and therefore you have reference when they come for audit, be it the external auditors, your private auditors, as they normally would use, you already have something that you have worked out with the AG to the effect that on this matter we have consulted and this is their view. It does help. But once I'm responding that question, You are not the only entity that has that problem. And I have not picked it. I didn't pick qualifications or the other. For instance, the Tsong. The Tsong has got, as well as the Bloemfontein, yes, they are in the same situation as yours. They have not been qualified on that aspect. It would be interesting as to why the treatment is different, but yeah. I know the Tsong, I mean, some of it, one of the Tsong one is very far from any area where they can get any supply. I mean, the Tsong in Bronco Strait, the one, who's that? Down there. The farm one, remember? Willem Prinsloo. Far flung area. Actually, all of the Tsong entities are exactly in the same situation as yours, and they use their own facilities in-house. So, yeah. I guess if you engage the AG, you would find solutions ahead of time on that matter. There are two things, actually three things that I'd like to know from, just something that I missed out on what the chair of the entity raised. You raised something very interesting about the functional libraries, but you also raised an issue when you concluded that aspect about the number of, you said something about the households that are without books. I think I want you to repeat that thing because it slipped in my mind and I would want to follow up on that matter. The other question is something that you raised, and I could not find how you concluded on the matter. You raised an issue of cultural impoverishment in that area. If you could elaborate on that matter. I wouldn't want to deal with GRAB because we've been with GRAB forever. The chair did reflect on GRAB. It's something that we picked up, and we can't agree more with your sentiment. We share your sentiment. It was a totally irrational imposition. Still doesn't make sense. And you've raised a very important aspect that we actually have not scratched the surface. And when you started to elaborate on the matter, I could just see that. Actually, perhaps that's where we should go, so that people apply their mind and say, you know what, this is not it. So I think your input has helped us to deal with future engagement with both the AG and Treasury, because we have a serious gripe with 103. It actually gives us an unnecessary work to oversight, because now we have to call everybody and ask them about something that we know doesn't make sense. And something that is almost unaffordable. Because once you determine the values of your assets, as Dr. Grootboom was talking, you have to put in insurance, you have to put in security, and the cost of that security would be just something that the country has not seriously thought about. So it's a total mess. So the adherence question is a small matter, but something that will remain with those people who done that thing would be worse than just this complaint. These millions that are wanting to dish out to comply are actually a few cents on the problem. The question is, after you've done that compliance, how are you securing? Because most of the South African artifacts are being stolen. It's a matter of fact. They find themselves in the auctions in Europe and so on and so on. So we actually just going to invite the world thugs to just use South Africa as their playing ground, especially our museums and art galleries. But the issue that I wanted the department, especially the CFO, to help us with. Because, Dichi, the entities that we met last week and this week are raising this 1% matter. Some of them are already litigating. And the entities appears to be on their own with the AG on this matter. And on one side, Tina says, Kulumel, and CFO's forums. It shouldn't be the entity's problem. It shouldn't be the entity's problem if there is a rule that says pay 1%. So they comply with their 1% and they have to then be left with other problems that are not their creation. I think we should actually get the answer as to how do we get out of that thing? Who is responsible? And why is it the entity's stress to raise the thing that they are raising? Because it shouldn't even arise if we have regularized our relationship with the AG, Treasury, and so on and so on. So I think the CFO should actually give us that answer, because I will recommend that with the chair that we actually get the AG's office back to clear this 1% and the outstanding matters, because we shouldn't be having things that can be resolved becoming problems for the entities. They should be concentrating on their core business and not to really try and address matters that are outside their bound. So I would, Chair, request that the CFO actually give us a thorough rundown as to how should the entities deal with this 1% and the remainder of the money. Who is supposed to be doing it and when and how, so that we know as to where we stand. Why do we have these kind of complaints therefore arising? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mulde.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. And I think we understand all the problems of small entities, as we saw quite a few of them coming through. And it is important that they stay doing their job, because they're doing quite a good job in that area. My question is just and I don't need all the detail. I see you said about own income. And that's important, and it's a way to solve some of the problems. Are there any space there to make it bigger or not? I know, I suppose the conference will be part of it. I'm not sure if it's donations or what is there else, how does it fit together, but maybe some information on that. I don't want to repeat what my colleague said about GRAP is actually correct, and we said that more than once. I don't know if there's time for a story, short story about the clock that was not working at all. And another clock was 1 minute slow, so they asked the computer which one is the better one. And after the computer did the calculation, it said the one that didn't work, because the one that didn't work is 100% correct once every day, and the other one is wrong the whole day. And why I use this, the Auditor General doesn't work with discretion, but that's what we're asking for. We want discretion. They work like the one clock, on the letter of the law. And sometimes that creates a lot of problems, and maybe what my honorable member said there, Maslangu, work with them, try to win the system, try to understand them, because their heads were different than ours, is my experience. Just maybe last one on the books. Monday we will have to have a discussion on the books, because I like books, my house has a lot of books. I believe everything that has been said about it, but you can check those households, Honorable Fungu, they all have mobile phones. And now the question is, are we getting old maybe with our books, and are they moving on or not, and does that address the problem or not? But that's a new debate. I'm just mentioning for the interesting sake. Yeah.
Any other questions, honorable members? Okay, let me give over to the gallery to answer the questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. Yes, we're all bored to death with GRAP. Can I just make one more comment? Heritage institutions are hammered with GRAP, other ministries not. The state owns more than we own. They don't have to insure and they don't have to comply with GRAP 103. Again, this makes no sense. I understand from the accountants that we're working on an accrual accounting system. The state is working on a modified cash basis and they're trying to work towards accrual. What will happen if they don't rescind GRAP 103 and the state finally gets towards the accrual system? And they too are going to have to comply with GRAP 103. Can you imagine trying to put a rand value on everything, from the union buildings to a cemetery in France to whatever thing, to monuments, public sculptures, and etc.? Can you imagine going through the police evidence rooms and finding Stefendus' as knife? What is it worth? Is it a heritage asset? I'm damn certain it is, but what is it worth? It's priceless. So it's an ill-thought-out accounting standard, and it actually just must go. That's my last word on GRAP 103. Dr. Kruitboom, in terms of insurance, yes, as soon as your finance people have determined what the collections are worth, you're going to have to sharpen up your insurance. I think we might find that there are many insurers that are no longer prepared to insure you because the risk becomes too great. In terms of the cultural laws, again, the entities have to insure, the law says so, yet the state doesn't insure. This isn't rational. We spend a lot of money on insurance premiums. A country like Germany doesn't. They don't insure their heritage assets, not even when they travel them around the world. Why? Because they're priceless. They're not replaceable, they're priceless. It's a bit of an ambiguous situation. In terms of the security that goes with the advent of GRAP 103, we already have put in as much security as is available. It's not bottom of the line in security, it's not top of the range, it's kind of middle of the road standard security systems, intruder detection, cameras, alarms, armed response, etc., perimeter beams. There is actually nothing more we can do. And after all this work we've done trying to make the entity accessible in terms of user-friendly, etc., the only thing you can do now is put a huge fence around it with an armed guard at the fence. Well, bang goes audience development. So you can't actually now make it so secure that nobody wants to go there. It's a problem. I don't have answers for those things, I'm afraid. I can only tell you that we've done the best we can. When you're looking at GRAP 103, you have two options. You can use the historical value at first entry into the collection, or you can use a current market value. WAG has elected to use the historical purchase price because we always had a value in our annual financial statement. The issues that we have are with the donations. Those donations are in the financial statements as nil, and very often donors want it that way. Now we're going to get a specialist valuator to put a value to a thing that we got into the collection at 1958. It can be done, but it's very costly. The rand value part of the GRAP 103 is where the problem comes. The other clauses of GRAP 103 are not bad. They are good issues. They are standard museum practice, and we should be doing them anyway. It's the rand value. It's only the one part of GRAP 103 which is undesirable. So maybe they must just modify that. That's the part that causes all the trouble in terms of security and so on. I'd like to make a correction about the emphasis of matter we received in the previous audit report. We were threatened with a second qualification if we did not accept the emphasis of matter on the cafeteria and on the consultant's expenditure. So we weren't qualified on it. But we will take your advice, and we will see if we can sharpen up our policy and discuss it outside of the audit procedure. See if we can get that out of the way. The chairperson has a question to answer about functional libraries, household libraries, and cultural impoverishment. Mm. Can I hand that to you?
Sure. Let me give you those figures again. 25,500 schools approximately in the country, and 11% of them have functional libraries. And of the 15 million households in South Africa, 50% are without books completely. I'd like to come back to you later and talk about cultural impoverishment, but I think that there are a couple of things up here that I would like to comment on. The first one is that I think it was... the arts are very difficult to put into silos, so we have, and I accept it from a bureaucratic point of view, you have to have a library and an art gallery and something here and something there. The arts are essentially subversive. They live independently of bureaucracy. And all you need to do is ask the sort of repressive regimes of the world, including our own, whether they could actually make use of the arts and stick them into silos. It's not possible. But I accept what you're saying. But the idea of merging the arts together makes a huge amount of sense dynamically in terms of what the arts are for and what the arts do in a society. Even a divided society, which is still, I suppose, the way of defining our own. Having said that, I hear what you say, and it would be great to get some encouragement from the department to look at the kind of merging of some of the various of some of the arts. It would be a fantastic thing to have a small department that tried to pull the cultural aspects of the DAC together, which might be a very productive thing to do. To see what kind of cross-pollination and all the rest of it could come out of that. You mentioned other income. Other income is very, very difficult, and in other ways it has huge opportunity. Quite a long time ago, it's probably nearly a decade ago, I wrote to the department from the council talking about various ideas where local economic, if you like, culturally inspired local economic development could take place. We did not get a reply. I twice suggested that, I wrote back twice to them. There was no reply at all. And there are huge innovations that can be made. And I'd love to come and talk to the department about it at some point, if you want me to. We ran, in the Northern Cape, we ran the Apollo Development Association, which was the work of a... we took over... actually, in the end, we bought it, not personally, but through our Section 21 company that we established as a community-based organization. We bought this old cinema, and around it, we developed a network of small business, and it worked reasonably well. We were a bit under-resourced and so on and so forth. It worked amazingly well, and at that stage we were brilliantly supported by DAC. We really were. And there are, especially in the areas where there is so little infrastructure, certainly very little cultural infrastructure, it could work again, and it would be wonderful to actually see whether we could put in place a pilot project. Let's see if it works. It certainly worked first. I think I've covered everything. Cultural impoverishment is... I think there are two ways of impoverishing people culturally. And the first is in terms of isolation. And we have in our country some astonishingly isolated places. But we also have a legacy of attempts to divide the country up into little segments so that people were isolated from any kind of national sense at all. And so we are fighting that kind of double alienation. But in the Northern Cape, it is astonishing how isolated people have become, and it's simply distance. And I've over the years, I've done, apart from growing up in Kimberley, I've done a lot of work in the Northern Cape, and people talk about getting out. They want out because it's an imprisonment. The isolation is an imprisonment. And the idea of regional development, regional cultural development, has been, and largely it's been missed, maybe because there aren't all that many people there. I mean, there's just over 1 million people in the Northern Cape, I think, sort of around about 1.2, yeah. And so in many respects, we've got in the country a perfect example of a laboratory, if you like, for dealing with cultural isolation. And I mean, after all, culture is not what people did in the past. It's what people do now. And the manifestation of cultural isolation is high alcoholism, high violence at home, domestic violence. Those are the manifestations of cultural isolation. And to do the things that the people want to do, I remember going to a school right up in the northern parts with the gallery outreach, and there were people, a little school, that had played cricket. How they got the ball to bounce on that sand, I don't know. But anyway, they played cricket, and they were so proud of that cricket. Now, cricket is a kind of Eurocentric thing, isn't it? I don't know where cricket comes from. Probably England somewhere. but these people loved, these kids loved cricket. And that's part of their culture then, isn't it? Because it's what you assimilate, and the idea of decolonizing African culture is in many ways impossible, I think. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We are now going to give over to the department to answer the questions that were asked from the department. My question is on the empowerment of teachers. Do you have artists in schools? Are there any artists in the schools that are from the program that's within the Department of Arts and Culture? Because there is that program. There are artists that are placed in schools. Do you have an idea of this program? How do you work with them? And I think that would really assist us as the committee, because we've been to some provinces, we've identified problems with the program, and just to know if there are any in your province before I give to the DG, and the DG will take over as soon as you respond to that question.
Madam Chair, if I could tell you what our interventions have been, then I will answer the department part. When we go to Port Nolloth, for instance, in the Northern Cape, with our exhibition, our well-planned activity sheets, the literature set work films, the crafts, arts and crafts, essentially not only are we dealing with the children.
Just add also the
distance of the... Yeah. Yes. I will talk about that. Essentially, when we're doing that, we're also training the trainer, because the teacher has had the subject dumped on her. She doesn't know anything about arts and crafts. So while we're there, the staff members are actually giving them ideas. The staff members are showing them how. We're now taking with us which we give to the school and the teachers. We're now taking books that have ideas and that have programs that you can follow. So the teacher at least can then follow what's in the book. When we present actual workshops for teachers at the gallery, we will show them how to make a product using a couple of different media. So you can say, now go and do this with your students. We also show, there's no point in showing teachers and children what to do and they have to go and buy expensive materials. So what we're doing is we're showing them what they can do with recycled materials that they find just lying around, useless, thrown away trash. That, at the same time as you're teaching the children, you're teaching the teachers. More specifically, though, it's the third time, since Salplaiki University started, we have been running a fine arts module for the B.Ed. students, the intermediary phase B.Ed. students. We've gone from having 16 students to having 58. That also gives you an indication of how well the university is growing. If I could just find my notes, Madam Chair. I think it's in the strategic plan part. Here it is. May I give you the detail? The purpose of this, now we're teaching the teaching students. So the purpose of this module is to impart foundational knowledge of art education as well as to instill an appreciation for art that can be carried over by these future educators to the children they teach. The gallery's presented these classes since 2015, and as I said, we've now just finished the module, 58 students. The module's presented over 4 weeks, 3 classes per week, divided into theory and practical classes. The classes focus on formal elements in art, importance of art in education, how to plan and execute artwork in the classroom, as well as implementing Elliot Eisner's theory of critical aspects of artistic learning. The students are tasked with 2 written assignments. They make use of the gallery facilities to complete these by using the reference library as well as the exhibitions. And the practical part, the students did lino cut printmaking, shadow puppetry and drawing, and then it culminates in an exhibition. And then this year we added on a film medium where they actually produced a short shadow puppet film, creating their creative puppets, it's called In the Shadows. Now this is the very closest way we can get to training the trainers. So we're doing it at different levels. I am aware of the department's program. I was aware that they were putting art teachers in school, and I am aware of the fact that there are artists in schools. I'm not sure how many might be put into the Northern Cape situation.
If not sure what they're doing there. You're even not sure of what they are doing, what they are training on, what the artists in schools are doing.
Madam Chair, essentially I understood that they were basically doing the arts and culture classes, but I have not attended one, so I'm not sure what they do, no.
You can switch off. The reason why I want the DG to come in is that we want the department to be able to see how the programs should dovetail to what is happening in the province for better impact, you know. So this is why I was asking the question, because there is this good training that is taking place, and you have the artists in one province, they were not even given an opportunity to train or do whatever with the students, because teachers felt, they are wasting our time. These people are wasting our time. So I'm looking at how the department can show that this program, artists in school program, can dovetail to the programs that are there already for better impact. Did you?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, the leadership of the William Humphreys Art Gallery, and colleagues in the department. I will take some of the, I'll respond to some of the issues, but other issues I'll refer them to my colleagues. Maybe just starting with the issue that you correctly indicated to us, Chairperson, that it was discussed. You created that platform for us to discuss the issue of GRAP 103, and I wouldn't want to go back to the merits or demerits of the standard. Safe to say that when we had a discussion with the colleagues from the AG, from the National Treasury, they pointed a different picture to say they are not as arbitrary as they are being regarded, because they were then explaining themselves in terms of what their expectations are, that they are not impossible, that first and foremost what they expect from institutions is to have inventories, which I think the director has just spoken to say that's museum practice anyway, to have inventories, because for you to be able to manage your collections, you must know what you have. But of course, then they move further to say they want a situation where they can see that the institutions do make effort to value some of their collections. And of course, where there are challenges, they want a very clear explanation of those challenges. And then they indicated that if that is the situation, it would not be a situation of just qualifying. That's the sense that they gave that day. And I remember that even the mood of the committee was, wow, but this thing seems to be something that is manageable. And our responsibility then, Chairperson, was that when the CEO's forum meets, we will then create a platform for the same Treasury colleagues to come and explain that, which in fact we did have the last CEO's forum. They did come to explain. Unfortunately, they were not the same person who came. It was someone else from National Treasury. We then gave them platform to explain. But I must say, Chairperson, that if I were to sum up the outcome of that, is that institutions were still very much unhappy for reasons that have been articulated, of course, by Ms. Pretoria. So I just thought that let me give that feedback, because we did, as a follow-up to what happened at the portfolio committee, the CEO's forum, we invited colleagues to say, come and present as you presented at the portfolio committee. They came to present. But I must say that there wasn't an agreement on everything. Then maybe just moving out of the GRAP 103, Chairperson. I'll ask Dr. Tiso to then talk to the issues of governance as asked by Honorable Rodbom. But the other issue that Honorable Rodbom referred to was the redress of past imbalances, which I also found out that he then realized that during the presentation of Ms. Pretorius, it became clear what they meant, that they are beginning to buy, you know, artworks and paintings from the previously disadvantaged communities. But also, beyond that, they are beginning to work with communities, more particularly underprivileged communities. That's part of the transformation agenda that the institution is actually driving. Now, with regards to the issue around the conditional grant and the library, I must say that the conditional grant, as it stands, it's more about the department transferring to provinces on the basis of the business plan that the provinces sent to us. And I must say that we have not explored this, Chairperson, of saying, over and above just community libraries, over and above, because now we're only not just talking about community libraries, we're also talking about school libraries, which the Chairperson has spoken about, that most of them are not functional. In fact, it's only 2 years ago that the Department of Education then, in terms of the conditional grant, then gave money to the Department of Arts and Culture, because they said they really don't have,
you know, the time and the capacity to actually deliver on libraries. That's why we then spoke about dual libraries, dual purpose libraries, where the department is now looking at the school libraries as well as community libraries. So I think that that's an area that we might just want to look at and say, is there any way that the provinces can just look beyond community libraries, look beyond the school libraries, and also look at these facilities that are located within the province? Because William Humphrey's Art Gallery is a resource within the province. So if there is that synergy between the plans of the province and the plans of the gallery, I think that there could be some kind of benefits accruing to the gallery in terms of accessing some of the resources. But of course, what it would mean that broadening the planning process to ensure that maybe at the planning phase, there is that conversation between the gallery and the province, so that when they submit the business plan to us, it encapsulates some of the activities that actually might be performed by the gallery. So we have never explored this, and I just think that this discussion assists us in actually beginning to say maybe these are the things that we need to look at. I think that it talks to the issue. I might be misquoting a chairperson, but it just talks about the bureaucratization of culture, because in most cases, all of us, we, you know, the creative processes, and the, you know, they get hampered by our fear of the laws, the press scripts, and you know, you always want to say, let me ensure that what I'm doing here is not going to put me into trouble. But I just think that, you know, there should always be an attempt of saying, how can we be creative within the press scripts of government? And I just think that maybe by doing that, we might really just move a step further in terms of the developments in the country. Chairperson, I've noted the suggestion or the what you have said in terms of what you have tried to share with the department, and we will create that platform for yourself to come and just discuss with us and see what is possible. I think that in terms of the artists in schools as well, Chairperson, I can't agree more with yourself that if there is a program of this nature which is being run by the department, and we have got institutions, our institutions in provinces, they have a very broad overview that there is this project, but they have never touched it. And I just think that it speaks to one missing issue of working together quite closely. Because, for instance, in the area of the Northern Cape, it would have been ideal that at least the director, you know, can talk authoritatively about some of those schools. But I just think that that's one of those things, Chairperson, that we will have to work on. I would request Dr. Diso talk about governance, and there was an issue around the audit fees, which I would request that the CFO talks to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members of the committee, the DG. Yes, Honourable Makrotbom is right in that there were minor changes in the presentation that was presented to the portfolio committee compared to the one that was submitted originally. Upon perusal of the presentation, I think we were preparing for the audit for the portfolio committee, we identified some mistakes in two slides, two tables. I think the first table that you're referring to, Dr. Frodbom, is the one that relates to the financials that gives the historic background, and there's one column specifically for 2015-16 financial year where the figures have changed, because we found that we made an error there. there was an error, so we had to correct that. And then also the other slide relates to the governance. And there's one slide there, I think, in the last column, which is the 16-17 financial year. We updated that to then incorporate, after having conversation with the museum, that because we felt that some of the figures were not tallying up, so we had to sort of speak to the museum, and we had to then effect those changes. So we sent the presentation very late, which was yesterday, and we apologize for that. But we felt that we needed to effect those changes because it was giving a distorted view of the situation at the museum. Apologies for that.
But I think it's important for the department to declare even before we begin to discuss, or before they present, they do the presentation beforehand, to say we have made changes because of this, that, and that. Not for the committee members to ask the question on the changes made by an entity or the department in the documents that are presented. And I think you need to ensure that this never happens again. Because as we always say, when a document lands on our table, it becomes a public document. And so then, how do you go back and say, no, because people are going to accuse you of lying to the portfolio committee. That's what the people are going to say. You are lying to the portfolio committee. Mm. Meanwhile, it's a mistake. So it's important when you make a change, don't let us ask about a change in your document. You must declare from the onset that in the submission that we sent, we have made these following changes, so that it's clear and it's recorded. I think that's very important.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The issue of audit fees in the public entities is continuing to be problematic, especially in our small entities, which cannot afford the fees charged by the AG. And in terms of the regulation of the Public Audit Act, is that the difference of the 1% should be covered by national treasurer. And all these years, what has been happening, an invoice will be sent to national treasurer to settle that difference. For some entities, it happens on the spot or at the required point in time. But to some entities, it's taking long. And some of those entities are within the arts and culture sector. And we've been following up with national treasury about this. And, you know, it was funny last year when one of the museums' audit fees have been paid, but the rest have been ignored. And we asked treasurer, why are we selective in dealing with the audit issues? They could not, you know, give a very useful answer. They said, no, the museum was making more noise. You can just imagine that. The museum was making more noise than the others, of which it was very unfair for us to hear such an answer from national treasurer. Another typical example is, if you know about the issue of the National English Literary Museum, who were actually qualified because they did not want to disclose the amount owed to the AG as a liability, because they were disputing the amount to say this must be treated as a contingent liability, because we are disputing the amount because it must be paid by National Treasury but not by the museum. The museum were qualified for that. When we did an analysis, we found that actually Treasury was paying AGSA for those invoices, but they were crediting a wrong account. So even the AGSA himself could not account for money received for National English Literary Museum, who were in fact qualified for those particular liabilities. And it is still an issue which I believe they wanted the Auditor General to, you know, to reverse the audit finding in that particular regard. So it's a matter which is very typical in our CFO's forum, which we are holding tomorrow, and we are one of the matters we are dealing with is this issue of audit fees for the small entities. So it's a matter that is still receiving attention.
Honorable Khoto?
Chair, just a short follow-up. I believe this these audit fees of William Humphrey and Saad Gallery comes down from 2014, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to add to that, we learned last week that there is an entity that is even litigating on this matter. And we were saying, but who's the department? Because we are, as the portfolio committee, we are weary, really, of entities who spend money on litigation. We don't want this. It's totally unacceptable. And if an entity, because of audit fees that are outstanding, has to go to court, no, guys, this is not on at all. So last week we were saying, where is the department when it even comes to the stage of going to court, of hiring lawyers? No, 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 no. It can't be. Spending 50,000 rand, even if it was 10,000, on lawyers, it's not acceptable. The department must intervene as soon as it can, so that we don't even have to go to court for some of the things. In fact, there are issues that we are going to raise here when we look at the APP of the department. Issues that, things that are happening in entities that we feel are totally unacceptable. So we, as the portfolio committee, we believe that the department can do better in early intervention, early detection and intervention of issues before they go to court. Where do we get this money, you know, to go to court when we don't have money to deliver services? Mm. I think it's important for the department to really look into this issue. And as Honorable Khrotbom is saying, this is not today's thing. It's coming from previous years. And where was the department? Can you please tell us? If it comes from the past, if there's a past, there's history on this issue, how, in your CFO's meeting, in your CFO's meetings, what are you discussing? Aren't you saying these are the issues this financial year? And when the financial year comes to an end, you deal with those issues, you put them aside, and you look at the issues of that particular financial aid. What do you discuss? This is what we always ask. In the CFO's meetings, what do you discuss?
There are issues like, for example, the audit fees, because they should be settled by National Treasury. What we do, we'll consult with National Treasury and give them all the list and the amounts that are outstanding. And National Treasury themselves, within the Office of the Accountant General, they are supposed to do the settlement. And what we do on our side, we do a follow-up with them. And they always tell us that we will be coming back, they are still consulting within Treasury. So as a result, time lapses and the audit is completed before the amount are settled. And that's where we are sitting, and the delay is from the side of Treasury to say when are they likely to settle those particular liabilities.
No, I think, Chair, we should take the advice. As the CFO has actually explained, maybe I think if we see that time is actually going by and there are no responses, there should even be some kind of intervention even from my side in terms of writing to National Treasury and even asking for the meeting so that we can try and avoid these things. But we just to take the note of the advice.
And cite the implications of not paying in time. Honorable members, I think we are now going to come, we are coming to an end of this presentation of this gallery that's doing a lot of good work out there. And we just want to say to you, we are encouraged by the work that you are doing, and we are hoping that come September, the department will be in a position to look at all the entities and the model that they are going to come. Because what we have always said is that we don't want entities to be funded on the basis of my mood, how do I feel today, or on the basis of my emotions, do I love this entity or don't I love this entity. We want entities to be funded on the basis of the work that they're doing and of the impact that they are having in the community. So come September, this is what we are going to ask for from the department, that give us your model, because we've wanted this funding model from day one, because we could see that something is not right here. There's something that's amiss. So we want to encourage you to keep on doing the good work and to write to the department. As I said, the department is your mother, to talk to them, to convince them, to ensure that your programs are supported, and to suggest to them that, like the DG is saying now, that they are going to look into the issue of library, you know, the library services, because it's something that's in there. And go to your provincial department to say, this is what this is our vision, we would like to have this thing, this is how it's going to assist, there is work that we are already doing, and this is the impact that the work we are doing has in the community, and see if they can't assist you in that area of the library services. And also, looking at the pictures, I think the work that you're doing is so good, starting from children as little as they are. And to also, with your social cohesion program, to ensure that you have kids from the previously disadvantaged areas, kids from the previously advantaged areas, so that kids can start from that early age to come together and to talk about nothing but just getting used to each other. So I think it's very important for us to do that, because as the chairperson said, you know, it's all, these things are all in the mind. You create something in your mind, and that's only, you can't just act, you can't just change. It's created in the mind first. So when you bring these innocent souls together, because they are so innocent, kids are so innocent, and they're not looking for anything but love and laughter and joy. You bring them together so that they get used to each other. And we will, in the Northern Cape, begin to see what we are pining for. Really, cohesion in our society. And one day you look back and say, come and look at this community. This is what we have done in this community to bring communities together. So I think you are doing a good job, and we want to encourage you. And with the support of the department, I think you will do more. Thank you very much, and you are now excused.
Thank you,
Honourable Members. Only 5 minutes smoke break, but not for smoking. 5 minutes. Okay, thank you.
Okay, William Humphreys. I've been at the afternoon.